Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
This is a story about a series of murders and disappearances that happened in the winter of 2000, previously on A New Winter. It wasn't just a bloody massacre of 20 to 30 people, all shot up and lying in pools of blood. It wasn't the fact that their guts were hanging out, that they'd all been brutally murdered. The real shock was that they were all me. This is episode 39 of A New Winter. I started to hyperventilate and couldn't get out of there quick enough. I almost fell out of my chair trying to spin around. Then, all of a sudden, it went completely dark. It sounded like the power had gone out. I felt an intense pressure in my head. I couldn't move. The pain was so intense. Then it dissipated. I tried to see if I could make anything out in the dark, but it was useless. I might as well have just had my eyes closed. Then I felt someone pull my chair back. I jolted forward, and a hand kept me seated. "Come on, let's go," I heard the voice say. It pulled me back and turned around. "Where are we going?" I whispered. "Who are you?" "I'm just doing what you tell me to do. You know who I am. Now keep quiet. Someone could hear us." "How can you even see?" I whispered, even quieter. "I can't. I just know these corridors like the back of my hand. Well, up to a certain point anyway. Now shut up." I remained quiet as the man pushed me around a few more corners. I felt like I was asleep. The motion of the chair, the utter silence, the exhaustion, and the pure darkness, all lulling me into a false sense of security. Perhaps it was a defense mechanism from the horror that I had just witnessed. My brain refusing to believe that I was awake. What the hell was it that I had just seen anyway? Had they really all looked like me? Was it maybe a trick of the light? Perhaps it was my brain playing tricks on me again. Dr. Carver had said that this brain tumour that I apparently have, well, that it might shift my perception of reality. But I don't think I could have imagined all that bloodshed. Someone had gunned down all those poor people. The patients that had been in the other rooms just mere feet away from me. And now, it seemed like it was just me and this mystery man. "All right, you're here. I've done what I've been asked. Can I go now?" I paused for a second. "Are you asking me? No, I don't know what's going on." Just then I heard another voice pop up from nearby. "Yeah, leave us." I heard the mystery man walk away, and then a new mystery man started pushing me. "Where's this?" I said. And soon I was pushed through a door and blinded by a bright white light. I was startled momentarily as my eyes just tried to adjust. As they did so, I saw three bright standing lights connected to a generator, and in the middle was an operating table with tools by the side. And at one end of the room sat Dr. Carver, motionless, but with a face dripping in sweat and fear. As I looked to the left of him, I could see why. There was a patient, his head covered with a pillowcase, with eyes cut out, and a knife pointed towards the doctor. Then another man, wearing the same as the other, including the pillowcase, stepped forward. "Now, Dr. Carver, it's time to operate." But it could be fatal," the doctor was quivering. "It's a risk, yes, but we don't think it'll be a problem." "What's happening here?" I cut in. The knife-wielding man turned to me. "We're going to save your life. Dr. Carver here is going to cut out the tumour, or whatever that thing is that's in your brain. Apparently it's killing you." Dr. Carver started mumbling, I don't know if... "Listen," said the man who pushed me in. "You're going to put him under and cut it out. I know you can do it. It's important that he lives, do you understand? So don't mess it up." The doctor was shaking. "Look," I said, "I appreciate that, you know, you guys are trying to help me out or something, but really, this is completely unnecessary. There's got to be a better way." "Look, it's necessary, I'm afraid," the hooded man said back. "In fact, you don't realise how necessary it actually is. You'll be fine, don't worry." Just then the other man snuck up behind me and injected me in the arm with something. Before I knew it, I was asleep. After a while, I started to wake back up. I was groggy. My head was killing me. My eyesight was groggy as well, but I could sit up. I placed a hand on my head and I felt bandages. No wonder my head hurt. As I looked around, I saw blood smeared up against the wall. It looked like some kind of handprint or something. There's a pool of it near the door I came in. The instruments next to me were clearly used, dirty with blood and God knows what. Had I been fixed? Where exactly was everyone? I was so hungry and thirsty. Beside me was a plastic cup full of water and I quickly downed it. That'd have to do for the moment. I swung my legs round and realised I could move them. I moved my toes, kicked my legs out, and they were perfectly fine. It's a miracle, I thought. I then slowly got off the operating table and there I stood on my two legs. How'd this happen? And where's Dr. Carver? I followed the trail of blood, but the darkness had enveloped it beyond the room. I needed a torch or a lighter, just something. I looked at the generator. It was nearly empty. How long had I been out for? I touched the blood on the wall. It's dry, it's flaky. It hadn't happened recently. I searched the room and found, fortunately, a thin torch, which they must use for surgery or something, and I clicked it on. Luckily, it worked. I wandered out to the hallway and followed the blood. As I ventured away from the operating room, I became terrified, and not just because of what could be lying around the corner at any instant, but the fact that I'd been lying there, with the only source of light around, and completely vulnerable that whole time, sent a shiver down my spine. I kept walking and saw the blood lead into a nearby room. As I went in, I almost screamed in fright. I edged the door open even further and all around this large room were a series of black, gooey sacs, pulsating, thumping. There must have been about 50 of them. There's a huge mark painted on the back wall. 237I, it said. How many rooms of these were there? In front of each sack was a little sign on the floor. It made up about 6 or 7 random numbers and letters. I mean, at least to me, they were random. These were what I'd seen Kate come out of, back at the Stockwell farm in front of Mr. Tooley. I looked into the nearest one and I could see nothing but black. And as I got nearer, it suddenly moved, making me drop my flashlight. And as I followed its beam, I saw Dr. Carver. He was lying across the ground, facing me, and the top of his head had been caved in. His eyes rolled back. It was a bloody mess, and it nearly made me vomit. I picked up my flashlight, and as I brought it back up, I saw one of the hooded patients walking towards me. I was startled and tried to run, but he was already upon me. Grabbed my arms and stared at me through the pillowcase he was wearing. His eyes looked tired, yet burning bright with energy. "Listen to me," he said. "All you have to do is find the purple room. Once you're there, he'll know where to take you." "Who? What do you mean?" I said. "Just find the purple room, now." And with that, he ran out. I waited until his footsteps had disappeared, and then I backed out of the room. Where the hell was I supposed to find a purple room? How would I even know? Hadn't I heard that voice say something about a purple room before? Back in Father Jack Reynolds' place. I could feel my legs and feet slowly getting stronger with each step, as if both of us were getting used to one another again. I used my flashlight and searched down the corridors. It looked like I was trapped in this maze. This god-awful place that looks exactly the same, no matter which corner you take. Nothing here is signposted. It all just goes round and round and round, and who knows where I'd end up. Then I felt a pressure in my head. Was this all too much for me after the surgery? And I felt a presence, a monstrous presence. I quickly moved to the nearest room and shut the door behind me. It was some kind of laundry room, loads of identical patient outfits, bed sheets, uniforms, things like that. I turned my torch off and sat in complete silence. Just when I thought maybe whatever it was had gone, I heard an almighty high-pitched scream, similar to the masked ones, that gut-wrenching, animalistic noise. I heard it bounce off the walls. What was it? Was it this disorientated creature? Was it maybe injured? And then slowly, it went out of earshot. I took a deep breath and switched on my light again. I almost jumped out of my skin. There, the hooded stranger from before was here again, facing me. "Shh, calm down," he said. "You're looking for the purple room, right?" "Apparently," I said, clutching my chest. "All right, put this on." And he put a pillowcase on my head and with some scissors, cut two holes for my eyes to see through. "All right, that should be better. You see all right?" he asked. "Yeah," I replied. "Okay, you'll need this, believe me. You don't want... well, you don't want certain people seeing your face. Now follow me." He led me down a few corridors, and we were extremely quiet. He just waved me forward every now and then, if I was slowing down. And to be honest, it was tough readjusting to walking again. In fact, he could see that it was troubling me. "It's your legs, right?" he said. "They've been giving you on these drugs, haven't they? You know, so you'd feel them not working. It stops you going anywhere, you know, they don't want you to go. Look, you'll be fine in no time, don't worry about it." I nodded, slightly dubious about what he was saying, and we carried on. "Sue here," he said. And then as we turned a corner, I could see, from around a door frame, came a blue light. "There we are," he said. But wait," I pulled him towards me now. "That's blue, it's not purple." "Just wait," he replied, "you'll see. Now, walk on through." "Just me? Where are you going?" I asked. "I'm getting out of here, mate, but you need to go through that door." Just then, the power seemed to kick in, but this time I was surrounded by a red light. This is all becoming familiar. An underground corridor, a red light. Then as I looked towards the door, I could see the blue light was mixing with the red to give. "The purple room," I mumbled to myself. "That's right. Now go." And he pushed me along. As I walked towards the door, I felt an overwhelming sense of energy. What was behind here? I opened the door, and in a moment, I was blinded by the light. I felt something dragging me further into the room. I kept walking, and suddenly I recognised where I was. I was somewhere I'd been not even that long ago. I was somewhere high, looking down into a forest. And in that forest, I saw myself looking back up at me. I was still surrounded by that blue light, but here I was, back in the town, back outside, and back in the tower.
If you enjoy the show, please leave a review on your podcast platform of choice. For more info, including how you can support the show, please visit anewwinter.com. Thank you for listening to A New Winter.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.